We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. It is good to have you listening. This hour, of course, is brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. Happy Friday, everybody. Buffalo Wild Wings, it's happy hour now and every Monday through Friday, 3 to 6. Mike, tell me how you feel right now before we hear our quarterback coming up as part of our Falcon Report about this game on Sunday against the Broncos.
Yeah, a little nervous in the service, man. A little nervous about this one just because we look so, just meh against the Saints. The defense really had a bad game plan in the first as far as the explosive plays. Tightened it up, gets the ball back three times, Carl, but then Kirk Cousins, the offense, really didn't, capitalize on it. Cousins missed a bunch of throws early, and then I thought maybe we needed to run the ball a little bit more because Bijan was obviously coming up with some big plays. I really kind of lost a little bit of faith. I'm not saying, look, guys, we're locked into the division. We take a colossal Dan Quinn 2015 like fade to blow it, right? I want to reestablish what we are by getting this job done against a really stout defense. We win this one, then I feel good about winning more than one playoff game.
I'm with you. And by the way, it's interesting. We spent a lot of time this week talking about Bo Nix. Zach Robinson told us this week he got to know the kid when a private workout. Remember, he goes to Oregon. We know him from Auburn. But he's working him out, and he says, I got to know him a little bit. Listen to Zach Robinson.
Yeah, so I ended up not seeing him in Indy, but we went to Oregon, and he had a great workout, for us up there. We had a big group that went up there and saw him work out. Just talking with him, guy, totally loves football. He's all in. Tell how smart he was. Obviously, he's got some twitch in his arm. He can make every single throw. Extremely athletic. All those things were the reason why he was drafted where he was, and we had a lot of like for him as well. Certainly leading up to it. So, it's no surprise to see he's having some success, especially early on. He's a veteran guy that's played a lot of college football, still learning the NFL game, but very, very talented.
Interesting from Zach Robinson. That's our offensive coordinator. And he did talk about the Denver defense, which I'll let you hear a little bit later. But, Mike, as we prepare for this game, a lot of this is on the shoulders of Kirk Cousins, right? He's got to see what he needs to see. He's got to get time to throw the football. But he also, we got to get in the end zone, man. And to say that he didn't throw a touchdown last week, and you're kind of like, okay, you have these games where you throw a couple and then you don't throw any.
Right.
Got to have more consistency. Let's hear what he said in the quarterback report. Guys, we do it each and every week. It's brought to you by our friends at Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, just an hour away from Atlanta. Here he is with our own Dave Archer.
This is the Falcons Quarterback Report. The Falcons Quarterback Report is brought to you by Rooms to Go. Buy the piece, save a little. Buy the room, save a lot. Here's Dave Archer.
Now time to catch up with our quarterback here on Countdown to Kickoff, Kirk Cousins. And Kirk, it's kind of interesting, and I got to thinking about the schedule. I mean, obviously that they play 10 opponents that we're going to play, their divisional opponents, and then of course they're playing our division, we're playing their division. But I don't know, I looked at 10 games, they've got five common opponents. How much does that help you? Does that help you prepare?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you have a little bit of familiarity of, okay, we know that team or we know what they would do. But you focus so much on the Denver defense, and the reality is that that's not only a new opponent this year, but it's really a new opponent because I didn't play them last year. They're in the AFC. It's been a few years since the Falcons have played them. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a newer opponent when you play an AFC team. So, it's a good challenge for us. Have played Coach Joseph, the D coordinator, many times in this league, and he does a great job, and he's evolved. And so statistically, they're very highly ranked, and playing at their place, there's a lot of reasons to say we got to be at our absolute best to get this done.
Yeah, they look really good defensively. Certainly some of the categories and statistics would reflect that. When you look at them defensively, is there a style that kind of immediately jumps out at you as the way they want to play with?
Well, I think they rush hard. I think they play strong match coverage. I think their coverage is tight, and I just think they do a nice job executing, and they don't beat themselves, and they're going to make you earn it. They're going to prevent explosives the best they can, and that makes it all hard. And so for all those reasons, we're going to have to be detailed and just very precise in our execution.
I know how detailed you are. At least I've begun to learn how detailed you are and what you do and your approach. When you look at what you do each and every week, are there things that you pick out each week, or are there things that are common each week that you're working on?
Yeah, I think a little bit of it is every Sunday coming away from the game saying, hey, what did I do well? What can we build on? What wasn't good enough? Win or loss, you know, what wasn't good enough? What are some fundamentals I can draw? I came away from the Sunday game against the Saints feeling like I can manipulate coverage a little better with my eyes, with my feet, try to move defenders a little more in zone coverage. And there's a balance there of holding on the ball too long, but just seeing that, hey, there's some opportunities there to maybe try to open up some windows. So that's something you work on. You try to transfer to the practice field and then take it to the game.
It's been fun to watch you meld minds with Zach and the way things have come together for you guys here in the first 10 weeks. How much do you, with a defense like this, it looks like they're pretty good statistically in a lot of categories. How much do you have to kind of mess with their minds a little bit in play calling and maybe change up what you guys do some?
It's a great question, Arch. You kind of always ask that as well of how much do we need to change? How much can we go back to the drawing board? How much do we you know, have our identity, and you lean on your identity in tough times. And so it's always a balance as a team, as a coach, to say, you know, who are we? Let's lean on that. But then at the same time, let's throw a wrinkle. Let's try to innovate. Let's try to be creative and keep a defense guessing. So finding that balance is always tough for a coach and for players. But we're certainly in that part of the season now where people have a lot of tape on you, and you're trying to, you know, now build on that and add wrinkles.
Things change in ebb and flow in a game. Is there a key for you early on that you'd like to see get started without giving some game plan stuff away?
You know, I think always starting fast is important, which many times comes down to converting third downs. I think, you know, protecting the football always gives us a chance. You're going to stay in every game if you're protecting the football. And I think that was a big reason why we were close in the Saints game all game long was, you know, we didn't turn it over until that second to last drive. So I don't think you have to reinvent anything. I think you just understand the fundamentals that have always made good football teams win is the same fundamentals today. It's take care of the football. It's be great on third down. Try to control the line of scrimmage. Be efficient. Time of possession, all those things. And then when we get in the red zone, you know, don't kick field goals, score touchdowns. And so that'll be important.
There you go. Let's go get a win.
All right. Thanks, Arch.
There's Dave Archer from the heart of the storm, Carl, for your...
Yeah, for real.
With a very windswept flowery branch. I was waiting for the storm surge to kick in.
Man, that was breezy. he said not kicking field goals. Mike, to me, that's key. And this is, again, the fourth best red zone defense in the league. We got to find a way to punch it in. And Coach said to us last week, or actually this week, that, you know, that fourth down we went for last week and we got it, and we end up scoring a touchdown. Mike, this is who he's become, right? I mean, we didn't know for sure, like, is he going to be a risk taker? And I say that. The analytics tell you should probably go for it as well. But sometimes I feel like, again, coaches, and not just Rob, I'm just generally speaking.
Right.
It's your gut. It's your gut. Whatever you – like, are we moving the ball? Do I feel like my guys are moving people up front? Okay, then let's go for it. If I don't feel that way, take the points. My thing is, on the road, if you get in the red zone and you start taking the points, and God forbid, let us pray to the football God. Mm-hmm. Young Wei Koo starts missing field goals, then what?
Well, that's just it. I mean, this offense, we said, you know, to start the segment, we were kind of just, you know, inconsistent. And look, Kirk's got to have better ball, you know, ball management and hold out of the football security, I should say. And also, look, if you're going to be chipping, don't be tripping, right, when it comes to Caleb McGarry. You know, that was that Cam Jordan sack where, you know, they got their legs tangled up. And, like, I know that doesn't normally happen. But, yeah, we've got to be able to run the football. We're going to talk to our boy about Denver coming up here, Cristal coming up in a bit. But Denver is so good against the pass, good against the run. And then let's not let Bo Nix get away. Jimmy Lake, we talked about it earlier with Mark Ramondi from ESPN, how we give up a lot of points in the first half and then really tighten it up. Well, let's get that game plan dialed in for the first half, shall we?
Yeah.
Because I don't want Bo Nix running around out there. And anybody else, you give these receivers a chance to get behind us, bad things happen.
Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're trying to figure out what's going to go down in Denver on Sunday. So we need a little help. Brandon Cristal, who covers the Broncos Insider, joining us live from Denver. And, Brandon, it's good to have you back on the show, man. First and foremost, Mike and I spent a lot of time on this defense this week. I don't think Falcon fans realize how good statistically they have been. My question is, why? What are they doing? What's the deal?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. And last year, so much was made about the 70-20 loss to the Dolphins. You're like, oh, this defense isn't very good. But then they had that stretch of five straight games with five takeaways, which is pretty historic. But it's just that Vance Joseph is a lot more comfortable in year two, even though they lose Josie Jewell to the Panthers, who called the defense half the year. Then Alex Singleton took over. Alex goes down in week three in Tampa. They're not missing a beat there with the comfort level of the entire unit kind of understanding what VJ wants. Then there's an aggressiveness and a timeliness to how he's attacking opposing quarterbacks that has been really effective, which is why they're near the top in the league in terms of sacks. I think they're still second at last check in terms of getting to the quarterback. And they've made a couple of personnel moves that have worked out well. I think Justin Simmons moving on from him still hurts, but Brandon Jones has played pretty well. He hasn't intercepted as many passes as Justin often has, including last year, but he has made some plays, especially early in the year, taking the ball away. And P.J. Locke stepped into a starting role. But the biggest move, honestly, is John Franklin Myers, who they got for a song on draft weekend, a mid-round pick, renegotiated a deal for a guy that Jets just couldn't afford to pay and is high on the list of guys that has never made a Pro Bowl but plays like a Pro Bowl. And then Zach Allen on the other side, that's allowed him to really thrive. So they got a little bit better up front. They added Malcolm Roach from the Saints, too, and that's made him really good against the run. And then they've got the best cornerback in football in Pat Surtain Jr. And so you put all that together. And Riley Moss on the other side of PS2 has actually played really well. We haven't seen too many white corners. There's a couple of them now, both from Iowa. And Riley wears the long sleeves. There's a clip out there of the Kelsey talking about him this week on their podcast. And Travis was saying how he wears the white long sleeves. He thinks to cover it up. Jason Kelsey, because he hadn't had a Broncos game yet, wasn't even aware of who Riley Moss is. But I have a feeling that Falcons fans, like so many opposing fans, will know who Riley Moss is by the end of the game Sunday.
That's the thing, Brandon. We don't know any of these guys on the defense. And you just mentioned, you know, Allen and Franklin Myers, they got more sacks than the entire Falcons squad. We don't get after the QB. What has Peyton been doing with Bo Nix? Has he been expanding the playbook week to week, or is it still just basic, don't screw it up?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a little bit of both, but that was what the appeal of Bo Nix was for Sean Payton, is that he doesn't turn the ball over. And even in his roughest years at Auburn, I think the most he's ever been intercepted is 7 times. He didn't take a lot of sacks. I think some of that's the awareness. Some of it is more athleticism than people give him credit for. But they're not giving up sacks. And so even today, Sean Payton was asked about the O-line, as Pro Football Focus put out, that they've given up the least amount of quarterback pressures. But that anytime you have a team that isn't giving up a lot of sacks, yes, the O-line gets credit, but that's usually because you have a quarterback with high awareness and or mobility and or all of the above. And so as it relates to Bo specifically, you know, I asked Sean on Wednesday, because we measure this every week. It's the nature of what we do in this business. How is the team improving, or how is a certain player, specifically a rookie QB, performing week to week? And Bo isn't lighting the world on fire. They didn't score a touchdown in the second half. He had two really good drives in the first half against the Chiefs on Sunday. But when it mattered late in the game, he was able to drive him down the field and on third down hit Cortland Sutton to extend the drive and run the clock all the way down so they could take that last second kick. So we are really having to grade him week to week. So I asked Sean, because he's never really had a rookie quarterback play for him like this, certainly a rookie first rounder, if he's enjoying the kind of week to week progress report. That, of course, he has totally different metrics than maybe fans do, but just kind of that. And he said he really is just enjoying getting to know Bo off the field and coaching him and everything that goes into that. But Bo's progress has been incremental. Nonetheless, he's made significant strides, or was already ahead of the curve, perhaps, in ball security and pocket awareness, that even in the NFL, where we know defenses are way better than he saw in the SEC or the Pac-12, for as good as those leagues are at times, he's passed those tests most weeks.
Brandon Kristol joining us here on Dukes and Bell, talking about the Broncos-Falcons game on Sunday. You can listen right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coverage begins around 1 o'clock, noon actually, and then, of course, the kickoff around 4 because they are in Denver. Special teams, concerned? Well, I know you have a new special teams coach. We're familiar with him, but where are you with your special teams? Because we were concerned about ours after last week.
Well, obviously a concern when not only do you see what should have been a chip shot game winner blocked, but all the footage in recent weeks, going back to the Saints game 3-4 weeks ago, and then the Ravens game, and there were other games in there where Alex Forsythe, who's a backup center that's had to play some with their starting center banged up, jumping to that basically tight end spot on the field goal block, and then the extra tackle playing the wing back spot, if you will, where we've seen usually tight ends in that spot a lot over the years, that he was just getting bull rushed over and over. And so apparently, and Tyler Columbus, who close family member from playing there. I heard him breaking this down on the radio that he went and looked at the Falcons unit, and that there's always going to be one side that looks like they're getting blown up. And so the Falcons have had that a handful of times as well, not just, with a kick that gets blocked, but that there are guys who just get pushed back. And since the operation happens so fast that it's really hard to block from anywhere except up the middle these days. And so even a collapsing side of a line is a problem, but it doesn't truly affect the kick, because the kick's already gone before the O-lineman has been knocked back, or several O-linemen, or whatever it may be. But I think it's concerning that it has happened for so long, and Mike Westhoff, who technically was not the coordinator, Ben Katwika is, Gotwika is the coordinator, but Mike Westhoff will tell you that he basically invented special teams coordinators in the NFL. He's been doing it for nearly 50 years. He steps away this week because of a health issue. Some people say the timing is suspect, but beyond that, and Gotwika was quick to point out yesterday that they're top 10 in their special teams categories that matter, and they really are. They've been good in coverage. They've been good in returns. They've been solid kicking the ball. Their punt return is top 10 with the best punt return in the AFC, having another good year in Marvin Mims. And so he's happy with how they perform, but when you blow a game-winning chip shot against the defending champs on the road, there's going to be a microscope. So I don't think there's panic, but I do think people – expect that Alex Forsythe won't still be in that same spot, and they'll at least change some of the personnel around. One, because maybe he's not the right body type for that, or whatever it may be. But the coaches all owned it, said this is on them. Well, okay, that means the loss is on you. Players aren't going to cut you too much slack, but then you're going to have to go and make some sort of adjustment. And so we'll see what that adjustment is. But I don't think there's true panic, because special teams has been so much better in the year and a half that Sean Payton and these guys have been here than what it was in the previous years under other regimes.
It's Brandon Cristal with us, guys. It's BK Denver Sportsman on Twitter. We don't call it X. Joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Sidebar, Kawika got fired by Raheem Morris when he took over for Dan Quinn in 2020, because our special teams were hot garbage that year, for what it's worth. Hey, what about running the football? You know, we looked at the numbers, as Carl said, we were like blown away by how good Denver looks. Will we be able to establish the run against the Broncos, or is that going to be a long day?
The Broncos' run defense has been really, really good. And so establishing the run now, the 1-2 punch that the Falcons have is as good a probably a 1-2 punch as there is, because of what Algier can do on his own, and then obviously with how talented Bijan is. But to say that you're going to come in and just be able to run the ball because you want to, even when there is that desire by a coaching staff and an emphasis on the play call, and you got a Denver kid in Zach Robinson who grew up here, just down the road from where I live now in Littleton. He knows about all the great running backs that have come through here on the offensive side in Mike Shanahan's system, which he's running his version of that. But their run defense is a top 10 defense for a reason, because they're just stingy up front. And I mentioned Franklin Myers and Roach and DJ Jones. I didn't even talk about, but those guys with Zach Allen have just been really stout. And for as good as their pass rushers have been on the edge, these young guys and Jonathan Cooper, who just got paid, and Nick Benito, who's been really good getting to the quarterback, and the rest of those edge guys, they're really solid setting the edge and flying around, and their safeties are making plays in the run game. So if anyone could have success, and look, we certainly saw the Ravens have success kind of across the board that game, the Broncos fell off a cliff. But we knew the Chargers were going to run the ball, and they ran it effectively, but they didn't run it necessarily down their throat. And so I think that I like the Falcons' chances to maybe make a little noise. The average that they're giving up is 103, which is seventh best in the league. But I think that if the Falcons came in and ran for 120, depending on how many carries that was, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't know if they're going to be able to run it all over the place, because nobody really has, other than, say, the Ravens in Baltimore, which is understandable based on what their attack looks like.
B, what happens Sunday? What's your prognosis here? What's your outlook on this game and how it plays out? We've been saying lower scoring than expected. I don't think it hits the over. Where are you at on this?
I like the Broncos to cover because of when you're dealing with a young team, you can't have, you talk about moral victories. If the Bills play the Chiefs close but don't win on Sunday, there's no moral victories for a team like the Bills that's poised to contend for a Super Bowl. The Ravens in the opening week didn't have a moral victory. The Broncos, that was a moral victory last week, and you can build on that. So after getting punched in the mouth and getting blown out of Baltimore 41-10, they come back and have the Chiefs beaten essentially until that final final play. So I think they do bounce back at home. We're going to have really good weather. I think we're going to be in the low 60s. Sunny, we know this time of year. I mean, geez, we've already had snow a couple times last week. We matched the November snow total, just hadn't affected any football games. And it's been really nice weather kind of here all week, low 50s. Today it was 61. So weather won't be a problem. I think the Broncos win this game, but I do think they cover. And I saw where the line's going the other way, down to 1.5. I think the Broncos win this game somewhere in the world of like 20-17.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Under's the play, yeah.
Appreciate you, B. Thank you so much. Brandon Cristall, again, Broncos insider, joining us here on Dukes and Bill. Take care, man.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know if that's as good as Ice Cube, but he's also not as good a golfer as I am, right? Probably. He can't use his clubs like I can. So hey. I say to that, I say yay, yay.
Yeah, nice.
B brought his street cred. Hey, man. Hey, talking to B, man, it's just that's why we were harping on the defense and what we're going up against, Carl. Thing will be easy on Sunday.
No, it's tough. We got to play really good out there. The good news is he just said good weather. You don't know what you're going to get in Denver.
Right.
I mean, it could be raining, snowing, and all in the same, you know, within about a 30-minute period. That is good news. No excuses about the weather. Cool. Coming up, our conversation with one Barbara Dooley. She recollects about Tennessee and tells an amazing story about the Dogs and this rivalry. Stay there. You'll hear it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, Barbara, thank you for being here. Last week, I don't think anybody expected the Dogs to lose the way they did to Ole Miss, and I want to start there. You said it was going to be a tough game, and boy, was it.
You know what? I didn't realize it was going to be quite that tough. But I have to say, as I look at our team, I think something is terribly off. But I can't put my blame on just the offense or just the defense. They both look crappy in that game. And that's all I can say about it, except what do you think a quarterback's job is?
To lead the team and not turn the ball over and make plays.
Well, I would think that it is their total responsibility to move the ball, to score, or screw up. And it seems like all we're doing is screwing up.
I talked to
a couple of people that are fairly in the know about what's going on. You know, I'm not just right next to it like I used to be.
Right.
But they are saying that our freshman receivers just can't seem to learn the routes. That when we throw the ball, they're supposed to be one place and they're not there. But I said, I'm looking at receivers that where Carson throws the ball right in their gut, they drop it.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with them. I really don't. I just know something isn't right.
Right. Well, the best we could figure out, Barbara, it's just the depth that Kirby's had over the years, it's just because of the transfer portal and everything else, it just seems like they don't have – the next man up isn't as good as he was the years they won the championship. And that seems everybody seems to be dealing with that same problem.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, it is so equal now. But we are, I think I'm right on this, we're number four in defenses of the top 15, and we've played four of them. We have played tough defenses, but we are getting ready to head into a Tennessee team that we have literally beaten and beaten and beaten for about 6 or 7 years, and they run up scores, big scores, and they score on explosive plays. And, you know, that's what beat us at Ole Miss.
Right.
They had explosive plays. They were getting 20, 15, 20, 30 yards of carry at times. And it beats us. We're just, I don't know. I just want to cry, but you can't do that. You've just got to keep on keeping on. And when the tough gets going, you've got to see how tough you really are.
It's
so somebody just texted me like 10 minutes ago and said, I hear Georgia's having an all blackout team game. Is that true?
Is that true, Chris? I have not seen that yet. If so, I personally, Barbara, I hate those gimmicks. No disrespect to Mark Richt. I just felt like wear your silver britches and your red jerseys, it'll all work out.
Right. But somebody just texted me and said, is that true? And I went, I haven't heard that. So I thought I would ask y'all.
We are efforting it right now.
Yeah. We had not heard it either. We are looking to see. I've not heard any of that. It is Barbara Dooley joining us, guys, here on Dukes and Bell. Of course, this hour is brought to you by our friends at Mark Spain Real Estate as we talk about the Dogs. Barbara, I'm laughing with you, certainly not at you, when you said, I just don't know, because it sounded like Vince. It just, you know, when you said that, it just sounded like Coach Weir. I just don't know. But let's talk about... Let's talk about this rivalry that has been Tennessee. And I say that because you're right. We've owned this, right? I mean, they have struggled.
We have.
They've gone through different coaches. But it feels like, Barbara, they've settled down now. Heupel's done a really good job. They've kind of settled in. He's doing a good job recruiting. And maybe this is on its way back. I don't know if they're quite there yet. But talk about this rivalry from your time and what you've seen over the years.
Well, it's huge. When we first came to Georgia, Bill Battle was one of the youngest coaches in, Doug Dickey. I don't know where my mind is. Doug Dickey was one of the youngest coaches in coaching, and Vince Dooley came, and he and Doug were the same age, and we became really good friends through the years, and coaches back when we were coaching became good friends. And do you know how we met each other and had so much fun together? Through Nike.
Oh, wow.
Nike. Have you ever heard about the Nike trip?
Yes. Yeah, I heard a story. I heard a story one year that Ray Goff had to separate Johnny Majors and Steve Spurrier. That was after Vince retired. I don't know if that's true.
Our group loved each other. Right. Loved each other. And then after we left, everybody got real competitive.
Right.
But and they fought. They really did. But now, well, wait a minute. You know what? We talk – this has just clicked into my brain. Mm-hmm. We, at my first SEC meeting, we were all around the pool. Everybody was drinking and talking, and there was a reporter there from the Birmingham News. Mm-hmm. His name was Alf Van Hoos. And he had a bald head, mm-hmm. and he wore glasses on his head. He wore them on the top of his head. And the athletic director at Tennessee, mm-hmm. whose name was it Woodruff? I'm trying to think of his name. But anyway, he got so mad at him because he wrote something bad about Tennessee in the Alabama newspaper. He pushed him in the pool, clothes and all.
Oh.
And the last thing we saw were Al's glasses.
Floating. Yeah, Bob Woodruff was the AD, 63-85 up in Knoxville.
Is that a great story?
It's unbelievable.
Especially since the guy wore glasses on his head. You always look to see those people get their comeuppance.
Yeah, he wore them on his head, and we saw his glasses. Of course, Coach Bryant just thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen in his life. And but getting back to Tennessee, as much as we liked each other, we had children the same age and everything. When we got on that field, we hated Tennessee.
Yeah.
Son, Derek, was chosen as the head coach at Tennessee, and it ended in a nightmare, and I really hate Tennessee. I just want to tell you.
Yeah.
Because they fired my baby.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, he was in a tough spot. He was kind of in no man's land up there. You ain't lying.
Yeah, he was in no man's land. But you know what they did? They did not. He's going to be so angry at me right now.
Go ahead and say it.
Well, he got, they, They just did him wrong. If they had given him one more year,
right?
They gave him 2 years, and went, but they got a new athletic director, and that's always look around. It's always the kiss of death for the head coach.
If he didn't hire him. For those who don't remember, Derek Dooley followed Lane Kiffin after he left for USC up in Knoxville.
Right. Yep. It was a mess up there, a total mess.
Yeah,
and he was trying to win and clean it up, but a new athletic director came in, and if they don't hire the head coach, they're not very loyal to him. And so he fired Derek. Yeah. But I will have to say that Derek made more in 2 years than we made in 25.
Yeah, well, that's the new business model, right? But to your point about this, Barbara, and this is what I was saying, they've kind of been in the wilderness, right? You went from that to Jim Chaney, to Butch Jones, to Brady Hoke, to Jeremy Pruitt. This is why they've had no consistency, and now that's what I said about Heupel. So, you know, we'll see, but it's going to be a big one on Saturday. Before we let you go, what do you think? How are you feeling about Saturday?
I think Georgia is going to have to score over 30 points to win.
Okay.
And I think our defense, I don't know if they can go head-to-head with Tennessee because they've got a great defense, but I think our defense has got to step up to the plate like they did at Texas.
Right. Good call.
So that's what I think. But I'm going to be watching that game with everything crossed and a bottle of wine.
Barbara,
right on.
Thank you so much, as always. We love you. Take care. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Great times. And again, for guys who missed it on Thursday, we thought it was just typical vintage Barbara. We want to replay it for you. By the way, getting back to the black jerseys, students were talking about it online. There's some of the players even mentioned it. Kirby earlier this year from Rodney DeBalzi, who covers the Dawgs, Kirby said, I think that's just hokey pokey. He said, it's great for recruiting. We may do it sometime. He's not anti-doing it, but he basically said when it comes to, like, the jerseys and stuff, he goes, that shouldn't do anything for your atmosphere. He said, some of the best places I've played in, great atmosphere, they never change uniforms. He said, if it takes changing uniforms in Athens to get people fired up, then I'm at the wrong place. And I agree. So enough of that with Mark Richt, with all due respect. Come back, man. Take a look at the big stories. Also, plenty more to get to, including a story on the Falcons you won't want to miss.